The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and/or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all. Alrighty, we are back on the long road to ruin. I am your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, we are looking at the Lake Placid series. Yes, sirree, Bob. Yes, sir. Lake Placid is a series of American monster horror comedy films created by David E. Kelly, produced and distributed by Sony Pictures.
You're not even going to introduce me?
Why don't you let me lead the dance, my love? Okay, I got you. Just hang on a minute. You're ruining my rhythm here, sir. Anyway. Sony Pictures Home Entertainment, former studio. The series began with Lake Placid in 1999, directed by Steve Miner, and was followed by five television sequels, of which we will only be talking about three. Lake Placid 2 by David Flores, Lake Placid 3 by Griff Fruit First, I feel like it's his porno name, and Lake Placid, the final chapter by Don Michael Paul. Each installment revolves around the presence of a giant 30-foot-long man-eating crocodile in the fictional location of Black Lake, Maine, and the efforts of various groups to capture or destroy the creatures. All of the films, except for Legacy, reference members of the fictitious Bickerman family. And joining me tonight, Captain Interruptus. Ladies and gentlemen, he has taken a long, long road to ruin hiatus from the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, but he is back from the road where he turns the page. Master of puppets, ladies and gentlemen, Alligator himself, Jason Teasley. How do you do, sir?
Doing good. Do you know why alligators are so honorary, right, Mark?
I don't know, Jason. Why are alligators so honorary?
Because they have all those teeth and no toothbrush.
But I like,
man, I give you a Bobby Boucher Waterboy reference, and you give me the killing me. But I'm finally, this has been a long time coming. What, like 6 months?
This was on your third strike, by the way. We had tried this twice before.
This has been like, well, I'm sorry. Sometimes work gets in the way. One time I think you canceled. One time I canceled, and here we are.
I think the night that I canceled, you were kind of iffy on coming on anyway, and I'm like, don't worry about it, because that was the night.
Lights went out in Georgia.
Sure, that was the night I had to body double the ex because she needed help putting away her laundry. So she needed company to put away her laundry because she could not do it herself. She could do it herself physically, but she needed another human to watch her do it. Because she could not stand to be alone. So I, instead of talking all about Lake Placid with you, I body doubled her while she purged some of the clothing and put some of the other clothing away.
Was you singing Me and My Shadow while you done it?
I was singing something. Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help. Jason, you and I, late last year, early this year, did Anaconda because my baby don't want none unless you got buns on. Yeah, and then you're like, let's do Lake Placid, because we came up with this really funny idea of doing the a series of like a triple feature of like versus movies. And so we just kind of, you and I talking, looking at things. I think when we were researching the Anaconda stuff, we noticed that there was a Anaconda versus Lake Placid series. So what was meant to happen was we do Anaconda, then we do Lake Placid, then we do Anaconda versus Lake Placid. But this is like a comic book now where, you know, it just keeps getting delayed years and years and years, and there's no continuity anymore.
Hey, we'll keep wanting more. Yeah. This is like the Marvel. This is like the old school Marvel movies. You know, you give them the good stuff, you prolong it. We don't want to oversaturate our three viewers.
No, you definitely don't want me and Jason to oversaturate you.
Yeah, you know, we'll keep you moist, but we won't oversaturate you.
Not at all.
I'm still waiting for the shirtless podcast.
I almost went to go change shirts before we came in because I have a shirt that I got, I think, from like an outdoor like safari zoo situation here in Orlando. And so I got a shirt from that, and there's like one arm Bob's, and there's like a picture of an alligator. And I was gonna throw that on and wear that tonight, but wearing my Can't Knock the Hustle t-shirt that I bought specifically to antagonize Robert Winfrey about Barbie. Because you can't knock a hustle, Jason Teasley. But that's not what we came here to talk about. We came here to talk about Lake Placid. And other than my long drawn out explanation as to why we were doing it, because we eventually want to get to Anaconda versus Lake Placid. Why are you making me talk about this series?
Well, the first Anaconda was, the first Anaconda. See, this is where we go off the rails early. The first Lake Placid was was good.
The first shark.
Arguably. Yeah. The first triple-headed shark.
Mm-hmm.
The first Lake Placid was actually a decent movie.
And
it gave you a lot of hope. And some point to resurrecting Betty White's career, because if you watch this, Betty White is like the best thing of the first movie. She plays this like sweet, spoiler warning, sweet little old lady that is feeding this ginormous fucking crocodile as a, like it's a pet dog.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody can figure out why it's terrorizing. And then they come to find out, because she thinks of it as her fucking pet dog and she's feeding it. Therefore, it's terrorizing the entire fucking town. And the fact that it has really good cast.
Oliver Platt.
That
Bridget Fonda. Bill Pullman.
Yeah. Betty White. Like I said, it resurrected her career. Because Betty White wasn't known for her movie roles.
Yeah. No, for the longest time, modern audiences that grew up with her in the 80s and 90s knew her from Golden Girls.
And that's it.
More that.
And, like, she is a great comedic actor.
Yeah.
And this kind of, reintroduced her to a new audience. It showed how good she could be, because a lot of people, you know, when I was looking at some show notes, a lot of her lines and mannerisms and stuff, they just told her to go out and be herself. They didn't give her like really any direction, because it's fucking Betty White. They just said, this is pretty much what we want you to do. Just go be yourself. And a lot of it was a lot of ad lib, a lot of just her being Betty White and her own dialogue.
What is her, like, her famous line? Is like, I hope she bites her head. Like, you know, it's like, I'm rooting for the crocodile. I hope it bites your head off.
Yeah. And it's like, she's like your sweet grandma, but she's like, she's actually, if you kind of look at it, she's actually the villain of the film.
Right.
But she's like your sweet grandma that would bake you some cookies. But like it actually has, it's not great by any stretch.
It is perfectly serviceable.
Yeah, you know, you're not going in looking for like a Marvel movie Endgame. You're not going in expecting, Citizen Kane. You're going in for a popcorn film, and we're going to go into a decent popcorn film tomorrow night when I join Alexis and Dorian when we talk the Thanksgiving movie that just released, plug. But you know what you're getting. You don't go in with like high expectations. You go in, you're looking at for a filler. It's a tight, I think it's a tight 88 minutes is what it comes off as.
It's 82 minutes. It doesn't even make a 90-minute runtime. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very tight. It doesn't drag. It gets to the point. It sets the film, sets the story, goes with it, keeps it tight, compact. And I'm pretty sure that 82 minutes includes credits. So you're in, you're out, you're good to go. And
okay, here's the line. I'm rooting for the crocodile. I hope he swallows your friends whole. Like, her fucking delivery of that line is fantastic.
Yeah, because she does it in such a sweet, sweet grandma voice.
So matter-of-factly. Like she really comes across like everybody else is a burden and the crocodile's in the right. And I want to say it's because, without getting into the plot of this, it's like the crocodile somehow connected to her husband. So, like, she's been feeding the pet. She's been feeding the crocodile as a way of, like, still connecting to the dead husband.
Yeah, I think what it was, the husband, somehow the husband, the crocodile was there and the husband was feeding it. And then he died, the crocodile ate him, and she continues to feed it to have the connection to her husband.
Yeah.
I think it's some convoluted like it, but as crazy as that sounds, it makes sense in the context of why you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
But it's like you're trying to figure out why this crocodile, and then the funny thing about it is when you actually get the realization of she's feeding it, it's like she's walking out, like trying. I think she's got like a dinner bell or something, and it like just comes up to it like a little puppy for her to feed, and it's like you're looking at it. A kind of chuckle because it's just like so absurd. And for this time, the CGI wasn't horrific. Now, when we get into the later installments, we cannot say that. The CGI goes off the rails real quick. Like, I'm pretty sure our friends over that made Zombies, even laughed at how bad the CGI got. First Lake Placid, a solid film. Like I said, you know what you're getting. It's not going to win. You're not going in for an Oscar-worthy movie.
If you like monster horror movies and you're aware, you have a landscape, you have a monster, especially one that doesn't belong in that particular ecosystem, in that particular environment. And that's like the whole setup for Lake Placid. Is you have, it's something has been introduced into the ecosystem that does not belong there. So, like, act one, what is terrorizing the town? It's a crocodile. I don't believe you. Crocodiles don't belong in Maine. Second act, we know it's a crocodile now. What are we supposed to fucking do about it? And then third act is the resolution. And it's great. It's a very simple three-act structure. It's a very simple concept, but it's a lot of fun because it's essentially a slasher. It's a slasher flick where you have plot dumps and lines of dialogue exchanges and some heart-to-heart moments loosely strung together with a bunch of set pieces where the monster kills someone, where the slasher slashes someone. In this case, it's a crocodile. And it becomes about how cool the kill looks and how bloody the kills are. But along the way, it's held up. I mean, like I said, this is like an all-star cast. It's held up by some pretty solid actors. You know, and I would imagine, like, Oliver Platt doesn't hurt for work. Bridget Fonda doesn't hurt for work. I'm finding Bill Pullman.
Yeah.
In the 90s wasn't hurting for work either. Like, we just did a director focus on David Lynch, and I was reminded he was in Lost Highway. Like, Bill Pullman didn't need to do Lake Placid. But I think they were given a solid script, and it's a fun script. Like, you know, there's a line about you do one for the business, you do one for yourself. And I honestly think, you know, this cast got together and saw this. It was like, look, this isn't going to win any Oscars, but it doesn't have to. As an actor, it's fun to just do a fun movie. It's fun to make something that's broad and has general appeal. And get a decent paycheck for it. And like I said, Lake Placid is better than it has any right to be.
I mean, Bill Pullman, I mean, it's just 3 years out from Independence Day.
Right.
I mean, which is one of his, like, most known for movies, simply because of the speech he gives as the president. So, I mean, you know, that's one of his upper crust movies, and he's 3 years removed from it. So, yeah. And the fact, you know, you ask why we're doing this, because this is right up out of your alley. This is a throwback to the genre of, you know, we made jokes about it earlier when I made the screw up calling it Anaconda, of the monster movies that we grew up in '80s, you know, like the original Piranha, you know, the three-headed, you know, I made the joke about the three-headed shark, you know, the drive-in feature movies.
Creature features.
The creature features that we grew up on, you know, like one of my wife's favorite movies, Eight-Legged Freaks, is another one that, you know, is a throwback to that, you know, and we dug this, we grew up on it. And, you know, that is one of the premises behind what me and you started referring to as the Be Real movie review, where, you know, me and you find movies just, that like throw back to our throw back to what we grew up on, and we just talk about it. And that, you know, this is kind of a throwback of the original Lake Placid. It's kind of a throwback to that creature feature that we grew up on.
Yep. All right, so the original Lake Placid, we talked about, it was written and directed, it was written by David E. Kelley and directed by Steve Miner. David E. Kelley is a television writer, producer, and former attorney. He created or produced a number of television series, including Doogie Howser, M.D., Picket Fences, Chicago Hope, The Practice, and its spinoff Boston Legal, Ally McBeal, Boston Public, Goliath, Big Little Lies, and Big Sky. So, you know, talented guy, a lot of solid credits to his name. You can kind of tell, like the writing of this movie is not real bad. Other movies that he's written, From the Hip to Jillian on Her 37th Birthday and Mystery Alaska. And then, like I said, he's got shit tons of television credits. Most recently, he did Love and Death on HBO Max, The Calling on Peacock, Avalon on ABC, The Lincoln Lawyer. So again, not, you know, Nine Perfect Strangers. So not a guy that I can sit here and go, oh God, like his credits suck. Like, no, he's solid. And then we have Steve Miner, who is an American director of film and television, film producer, and member of the Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences. He is notable for his work in the horror genre, including Friday the 13th Part 2, Part 3, House, Warlock, Halloween H2O 20 Years Later, and Day of the Dead. Other things that he's directed most recently, Private Valentine, Blonde and Dangerous, Texas Rangers, Big Bully, My Father the Hero. So, you know, a guy that's very niche, but he's also got a lot of television credits. Guy that's very niche, but I think, you know, like a solid, competent director when you need somebody to do your creature feature. You're not making high art here. You can get a guy that, you know, gets you in under budget. And this thing had a budget of $35 million, you know, and it was solidly profitable. It made $56.9 million. The reception for it is a 47% out of 95 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes with a 5.10 out of 10. The site's critics' consensus reads, Betty White's delightful supporting turn may be worth the price of admission alone, which is what we said. But Lake Placid is swamped by a smarmy script and an inability to deliver on the creature feature mayhem. That's an interesting place to start with this. I'm like, we don't need to get into the plot of this. A fucking crocodile's eating people. And I mean, I think at the end they blow it up. And then in the stinger at the end of the movie is Betty White feeding a bunch of baby crocodiles.
Well, you can't forget the best part.
What's the best part?
The cow.
That's right.
The cow that they have to rescue. And you don't know if they rescue the cow until it just casually appears out of nowhere and you hear the cowbell as it walks by and you cheer because the cow has been saved.
So this line about it doesn't deliver on the creature feature mayhem, you know, basically saying, they could have done so much more with a man-eating crocodile and they kind of, it's kind of half pregnant, I think is my interpretation of that. It's been a while since I've watched this movie. Admittedly, like I watched it, I think I watched it twice in preparation for this podcast. And then I did not watch it a third time after the second time that we postponed the show. So I'm a little, this is what happens when you guys postpone, when you guys cancel on me. So I vaguely remember what happens in the movie. But I remember like the kills being pretty fun, but I guess other people have sort of looked at Lake Placid and goes, this seems a little half pregnant, a little blah, a little nondescript. What do you think, Jason?
Well, you got to think a lot of these reviews probably was written, written on a knee-jerk reaction and didn't go back to enjoy it. And, you know, coming off 99, I mean, what horror movies like was coming out in 99? So, I mean, you got to look at what it was going up. You had the House on Haunted Hill remake, The Mummy, Deep Blue Sea, Sleepy Hollow, which you just did on trial for. Plug. Dusk of Dawn 2. Oh, I found a movie we definitely need to do. Rock and Roll Frankenstein.
Sure.
Sounds like it. You had Sixth Sense that came out in 99. So, I mean, you had movies that like set the bar kind of high. And then if you go back and look at, you know, Lake Placid for what it is now, you know, you get a better appreciation for it. But I mean, you know, some of those movies set the bar kind of high. And when Lake Placid hit, you know, you kind of feel like you let down in the creature feature and the horror genre. Blair Witch came out. Star of Echoes came out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's Idle Hands, which is great. End of Days, Bats.
You know, I often think about like when, you know, because it comes up a lot in our group chat about people who, you know, are paying close attention to the movie and are looking at the critical elements of it and saying it just doesn't stack up. And then you have people who are just casually enjoying the movie. And, you know, I don't know. I think Lake Placid, for as far as like casual slight entertainment, works really, really well. But I can see the argument for if you put a little more effort and a little more detail into some of this, you could have made something really magical. Like, I think about, as you were talking, I was thinking about Little Shop of Horrors. And one of this, I think the scene where Audrey 2 eats Steve Martin, like, the sound of him, of Audrey 2, is there's like a thudding as it clamps down on Steve Martin. And then it's followed by the sound of like breaking bones. Like you can hear the crunch. Like it is truly, like if you listen closely to Audrey 2 eating Steve Martin, it is truly horrifying to hear. Like they do a really good job of making that really look like feel intense. And Little Shop of Horrors is kind of a silly movie, but
it has its moments.
It has its moments. And I think to the argument about Lake Placid, I don't recall there being that level of intensity in the kills.
Well, I don't think that you was meant to have an intensity. I think it was pretty much, and we talked about the runtime. I think you could have padded the runtime a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You could have added, I think you could have added a solid 20 minutes to this and push it out to maybe the 108 mark.
Mm-hmm.
And added a little bit more, not necessarily gore, but a little bit more substance to the kills. Because I mean, and this makes me think, you know, the Final Destination movies, they have some really innovative kills. You could have done that and took, you know, just added maybe 2 or 3 minutes per kill and just kind of hit the mark a little bit better and kind of hammered the kill home a little bit more and up the quality tenfold.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the Oliver Platt character? Because he's kind of a, you know, so just to kind of set this up. So Bill Pullman's just trying to keep the peace. Betty White is feeding the stupid crocodile and causing the problem in the first place. Bridget Fonda plays a girl. And then you have Oliver Platt, who's like this really obtuse scientist. It's just like, sir, you know, this is about science. We have to understand why this crocodile is here. We don't want to kill it because, you know, we don't want to kill something that's, you know, majestic and whatever else. And both of them is like, we don't want people to get killed. That's really what's important here. That's a lot of the dramatic tension. Is Bill Pullman basically saying, what's important is the safety of the town? And Oliver Platt's like, no, what's important here is that we understand this crocodile and understand how it got fucking here in the first place.
Okay, so I'm going to make this correlation.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jurassic Park.
Go on.
Now think about it. Take every character and apply it to it is the same. Every character in this movie correlates to a character from Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Fonda is the girl from Jurassic Park.
Sure.
Pullman is the scientist from Jurassic Park. Platt is John, what's his name?
Hammond. Spared no expense.
Only thing we're missing is Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum.
Which, I was gonna say, like, we don't have like a wacko mathematician.
Yeah, because I mean nobody can be Jeff Goldblum. I mean,
anything else about the original Lake Placid before we start talking about these ridiculous sequels?
I mean, this we hit the high mark, so we might as well go and earn the namesake sake of this.
So the funny thing about Lake Placid 2 is I'm watching this movie, and it's about we have a new sheriff in town, and we have a family, and it does link up to Miss Bickerman or the Bickerman family. Because those babies that she was feeding at the end of Lake Placid 2, they've gotten a little bit bigger. And the plot kind of revolves around the fact that the sheriff's kid, as a kind of an attention-seeking thing, keeps wandering into the woods and keeps finding the alligators, the crocodiles, and then keeps feeding the crocodile. Like, he's stealing meat.
No, that's like three. You're three.
No, it's two.
Yeah, you're three. No. Now two is one of the when the Duke boys come to town.
Well, I was getting to that. I'm sitting there watching this. I'm like, oh, that looks like Wish John Schneider. I'm like, holy shit, that is John Schneider.
Yeah, two is Betty White has died.
Yeah,
he
gets replaced by Cloris Leachman.
Yeah, which I mean, you know, you go from. A big name actress to another big named actress. I mean, that has, you know, weight to her name. Yeah, you're talking about three. Three is when the grandson moves to town, him and his family moves to town, and the little boy keeps wandering into the woods. And it's the baby crocodiles and they eat his pet lizard, and he keeps sneaking off to feed him, and he's stealing like food from the grocery store.
Yeah, then I barely remember the second one. Like, I'm actually reading the plot synopsis now, but I fucking don't remember
the second one. The second one's the one where you message me and go, dude, did they get Wish John Snyder? And I was good.
Right.
I said, no, that is John Snyder. And he was like, no, it's not. And I was like, holy shit, it is.
Okay, what was the plot of the second one then? I mean, it's just more. The second one is
the babies from the first one pretty much grow up. Betty White has died.
Right.
And her sister is now over the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And she is continuing to feed them. And she's trying to hide it. And they're wanting to, and John Snyder, there's been some attacks. John Snyder goes out there because everything leads back to there and, you know, loosely woven together. And there's all these attacks. And this is the one where the guy falls out of the tree and lands on the crocodile.
Oh, that's right. Colin Ferguson replaces John Snyder in the third one. And that's when his kid keeps running into the forest to defeat the crocodiles. They're like, please stop doing that. Oh, this is okay. So two sucks. Three is awesome. Three is a home invasion. Three is so good.
Three is good.
That's the one.
Three's
where
not bad.
Yeah, three. Okay, I don't even want to talk about two. Two sucks. Three is great because like the whole setup to this is we have a poacher named Reba who's who plays her. You have Yancey Butler, who's a hunting guide, who will show up in the fourth one as part of like the EPA or some shit. She's great. Colin Ferguson, who is the sheriff actually from Eureka, he's in this and he's actually really good. Like he's better than this series of movies. But yeah, so the kid basically like keeps feeding the crocodiles, like he's stealing meat to feed the crocodiles, and the crocodiles get bigger and hungrier. And eventually they launch a home invasion and
it's like the purge of crocodiles.
Yeah, the crocodiles are like trying to like break down the door. They're like yelling, let us in. It's great. You know, and like they're trying to shoot these fucking things. Oh my God.
Little pig, let us in.
You know, they're trying to trick him to come outside. Like, oh, we're gone now. We're just friendly. We're just friendly hippos. You know, it's so good.
It's like the alligators are putting like hats and sunglasses on and going, you know, like their insurance salesman's knocking on the door. Yeah, three's not bad. Two is horrible because two is
utterly unremarkable. So I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, two is like it has the kid that's like he falls asleep in the tree and he lands on it on one of them. And it's like the CGI is so bad, you like see the crash pad he lands on.
I was gonna say, is two the one with the like the teenage drama? It was like
yes,
it was like okay, yeah, that's like a CW like Dawson's Creek one with crocodile kills, if I remember correctly. It's awful.
Yeah, and then at the end of it, like there's like the last like it like is there? It's a grenade. Like one, they have like. Eggs, there's crocodile. If I remember correctly, it's like crocodile eggs and a grenade.
Yep.
And it's like, and everything is like so like disjointed. You're like, and the CGI is like,
oh my
like
God. And like, John Snyder has his, he's like estranged from his wife or like separated from his wife. And so like the son's a ne'er-do-well and he was like sent to go live with John Snyder because he was like, his mom doing bad in school. And he meets up with like the hot girl, and the hot girl has a jock boyfriend. Like, wow, this is the most stock writing ever. And I like he runs afoul of the local bully, but then the bully gets eaten by the crocodile. Oh, it's oh my god!
Once the bully gets eaten by the crocodile, she falls in love with John Snyder's son.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
All in like 10 minutes.
Yep. Amidst the crocodile murder.
He's no longer around. I guess I'll fall in love with you.
Now, that's how that goes. You know, man goes to work, a woman falls in love with the guy that's paying attention to her. Anywho.
I feel like this is hitting too close to home, Mark.
Have you been on my podcast lately? They're all hitting too close to home. Anyway. But yeah, so the third one is the one where the Crocodiles are all trying to get out, and Colin Ferguson's trying to like fight his way out with Reba. You know, it's like back to back with guns and everything. Oh, the third one's fantastic. The fourth one just kind of ends.
Now the fourth one I barely remember. I remember bits and pieces, but nothing like really.
I was really hard, like after the third one, I was really fucking hard out on this. Like I don't remember this at all. This is the one where the star of this is Elizabeth Rome as Sheriff Teresa Jove, and yeah, so this is like the girl power one. And then Yancy Butler is the EBA agent Reba, and like God bless her, Yancy Butler has a lot of presence. She has a lot of pizzazz. She has a lot of, you know, she has some really funny line deliveries, but she's not a great actress. She's like very good for sci-fi movies, like. She should have been this. She could have been in Zombie Tidal Wave. She's that level of actress.
Don't disparage Zombie Tidal Wave, and it's Tidy Bow Zombies.
However, making her the second lead in this was not a good idea. like she's good in small doses opposite somebody who can act.
Yeah, I mean, and to its credit, Lake Placid. You know, when you go from the cast you had in one to the cast you had in four, it's a sharp decline. You when you got a movie with this kind of level of nonsensical stuff, you have to, if you're going to go off the rails, you need the cast to kind of,
I mean, in their defense,
make sense.
The first seven people listed in the cast all have hyperlinks to something else. Robert Englund's in this. He plays Jim Bickerman. Critical response for Lake Placid, the final chapter. Generally negative reviews, no shit, due to its uses of unrealistic low-budget CGI and an open ending that is conflicting with its name. However, Lake Placid, the final chapter, is also stated to be much better than both of its predecessors. Oh, I don't believe that to be true. It received positive reviews from some critics who praised its plot and character development. David E. Kelly, the writer of the original film, gave the film 4 out of 5 Star said, "Is this the last one, really? The ending doesn't make me think so. I'm glad to see Robert Englund in this and some of the cast from the previous movie. The effects are still lame in second and third, but the story is good." Ugh. And then Scott Weinberger, Fear.net, wrote, "I've seen a lot worse Crocs Run Wild movies in Lake Placid than Lake Placid 4. Yeah. I mean, this is our close out this silly discussion. It's not Crawl. Like, Crawl legitimately had some tense scenes. And, you know, if you remember correctly, that's the one where the woman is in the house with the house is flooded after a hurricane, I think in Florida, and an alligator gets into the house, and the alligator's like stalking her through the house. And because it's flooded, the alligator has the upper hand on her. It's good stuff, if I remember correctly. I mean, I think you, me, and Alexis and Robert gave it a halfway decent review.
Yeah, because Crawl was decent. The only thing that we like, there are some continuity issues we had with Crawl, you know, because Florida, you don't have basements.
Correct. But as far as like creature feature, see, it's one of those things where when you and I were doing like a lot of like the Zombie Tidal Wave stuff and, you know, was it Santa Jaws? So things like that. Is there was a certain level of acceptance of these are going to be awfully silly, you know, zombies. Like we know we're going to get shitty CGI. We know we're going to get B level acting. You know, let's just see if it all holds together. And like I said, the first Lake Placid's actually like one of the better horror movies out there from the hardy comedy horror genre. Lake Placid 2, I said, was barely memorable, but Lake Placid 3 solid, and then the fourth one. The fourth one has a silly charm to it. You know, it definitely has that B-movie sci-fi level charm to where you would never spend money on it, but you would absolutely watch it if you saw it on television. I'll give you the last word on this. We'll get out of here.
Yeah. This is a roller coaster. You start off really high. You go down to really low depths. You peak back up, and then four is just jumbled. So it's something fun. I would recommend one. skip two, three's good background filler or something, you know, to throw on as you fall asleep, or, you know, you just, you know, you got about an hour and a half to kill. Throw three on, you know, just get a chuckle, avoid four.
Yeah. I am now very excited to see, what is it, Anaconda versus Lake Placid?
Yes. yes.
Not since Godzilla versus Kong have I been excited about a.
So are we doing a triple feature on that? Are we doing a triple feature of
Mass? Yeah, I actually had to just reschedule that because I had to move around some stuff. But hang on. I will tell you when we're doing it.
We rescheduled.
Go. You know what? I can cancel. How about that?
Okay. All I'm saying is we were supposed to do a Christmas themed. Was it Santa Paws?
Yeah, I'm actually good. So don't get all pissy and hang up on me, okay? But I'm gonna do an alternative commentary of Santa Paws with my son on Christmas Eve during the day before we actually go to my parents' house.
Is it the horror one?
Yeah, no, we were gonna do Santa Paws. The cat horror movie, and then we were gonna do the Goldberg one, and then the Hulk Hogan one. We were gonna do like three terrible Christmas movies.
We was gonna do it with like, because we did a.
I know.
We did Santa Jaws.
Right, and we were gonna do whatever the cat one was because it was in the credits for the guy that did Zombies, if you remember correctly.
Yeah,
that's where we found it, and we're like, oh my god, we have to talk about this movie. And then, you know, life happened, but I am going to do Santa Paws. I'm going to do it with my son though. If you want to do an alternative commentary with us on Christmas Eve, you're more than welcome to, but I promise him that one. Anyway, if you'd like to know,
Crayola, man, that's a possibility. Let me, because usually Christmas Eve, we do her family stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That may give me an out.
Okay. Well,
so
the next time we are going to do this, we're doing an entire series of versus movies, a triple feature of versus movies. It's May 28th, Freddy versus Jason, Lake Placid versus Anaconda, and Sharktopus versus Whale Wolf. I can't wait for that.
What is it? Shark?
Sharktopus versus Whale Wolf.
Oh, Sharktopus.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. When are you back? When's the tomorrow. Next time coming on? No, with me, stupid.
I don't know, stupid.
Not until January. January 30th, we're kicking off Black History Month, which I promised you we would do the blackening, but it didn't fit into anywhere where I had time for it. So I kind of kicked it into next year to kick off Black History Month. So you and I will be doing the blackening, Black Christmas 2019, and Meet the Blacks. I don't know if you noticed, but there was a theme there.
Black people,
maybe in horror movies, and that's going to kick off Black History Month. We've got a bunch of really fun ones for next year. We've got What's Love Got to Do with It, I Want to Dance and with Somebody, and Respect. We've got Car Wash, Bruce's Million and the Toy, which is a actor focused on Richard Pryor.
I can't wait for that one.
We've got Mark and Jason We've got Mark and Jason take on the music of Black people with Hustle and Flow, Black Snake Moan, and The Wiz. And then we conclude Black History Month with a look at Black parody with Don't Be a Menace, .. I'm Gonna Get You Sucka, and How High. And then, because Jason insisted, we will be doing a Long Road to Ruin for the Friday series. So that's what's going on there. And that's all the stuff you're listed
for. You know why I chose Don't Be a Menace, right?
Because it's one of the most popular Black parody movies ever.
No, there's a second reason.
Okay, why?
What do we always reference on any show that?
Oh, Message.
One of us. Yes.
Yeah. Keenan Ivory Wayans in the mailman outfit. So yes. So now we.
What do you say to the nice man?
I don't remember the line, Jason. I have to go to the bathroom.
Are you my daddy?
Like Friday still has one of the funniest lines. He's just like, yo, can I borrow your VCR? I need the double tape. Get the fuck out of here. Oh my God. So it's such good stuff.
I got these cheeseburgers.
The funniest thing I remember from Don't Be a Menace is the parody of the Menace to Society bit where they're cooking the crack and they parody that scene and he's baking a cake. It's so fucking funny. Like I to this day, I still die laughing every time I see that, especially when you know that scene.
Our Black History Month is going to be fun. I mean, honestly, I'm actually really looking forward to it because, like I said, I'm not like really thrilled about the What's Love Got to Do with It. I Want to Dance with Somebody Respect. I'm not really thrilled about that, but for the purpose of it, I think it's going to be good, especially the I Want to Dance with Somebody. Because I'm curious how they tackle that. I've kind of avoided any information on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of, but I mean, Car Wash Bruce Vermillion and the toy, you know,
I love Pryor's. People have been asking me lately, like, who's on your Mount Rushmore of comedians, and Richard Pryor is one of them. Richard Pryor is fucking fantastic. One of the grandfathers of modern comedy.
Who would be on my Mount Rushmore?
Minus Sam Pryor, Kinison, Andrew Dice Clay. Like, I want to say Cosby, but now if you say Cosby, it's like, oh, you like rapists? Like, ugh, shoot me.
I would have to go Carlin.
See, Carlin feels like low-hanging fruit to me, but okay.
Carlin. I have to go Eddie.
Yeah, I think if you're like, you have to replace Bill Cosby, he's a rapist, Eddie Murphy. So it's Kinison, Andrew Dice Clay, Richard Pryor, and Eddie Murphy for me. That's pick four.
I'd have to go Red Fox.
Yeah, Richard Pryor is a better Red Fox than Red Fox.
And Pryor.
Okay.
I think that would be my four.
You don't know white people in yours? Oh, Carlin. Ugh, whatever. Carlin's every fucking old white person's favorite comedian. That's a boring pick.
Well,
So my son, who's a budding stand-up comedian, you know who I just introduced him to? Patton Oswalt. And I tell you, I've played all of Patton Oswalt's albums for, like, especially the early ones before he got married and started to suck. And my son fucking dies laughing. Like, Patton Oswalt does a bit about Tom Carvel and, like, you know, the pans. And if you flip the pan one way, it's Santa Claus. If you flip it the other way, it's this. But him talking about, like, Santa Claus, like, squinting his eye. It's like, Santa came into a bar giving us the hairy eyeball. We don't take too kindly to queers. So we worked him over with bats and pipes. And you can try some of our marzipan blood. My son was fucking couldn't breathe. He was laughing so hard.
I tell you somebody that I absolutely loved,
mm-hmm.
but his life was cut too short, was Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah, I think you kids like Mitch Hedberg.
I tell you somebody that I could not ask. He did a lot for comedy, the way that comedy came to college campuses, but I did not like his comedy, was Dane Cook.
Yeah, it's very bro comic, very modern bro comic.
Yeah, I did not like Dane Cook.
Obviously, I was a huge Robin Williams fan, especially his early drug stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like Robin Williams, Robin Williams is arguably on that route, Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm. I would take him over Carlin. Like, if somebody he's not funnier than Pryor to me. I don't think he's funnier than Cosby. I think Chappelle's brilliant, but if I had to pick four black guys, sure, you know. But then what about Chris Rock? Chris Rock is arguably
that's funnier. What I'm saying. I mean,
Chris Rock is arguably funnier than Dave Chappelle.
I think that if you go
Martin Lawrence, one of your personal favorites.
Yeah, Martin Lawrence. I think you would have to go Mount Rushmore eras because some people like fit in a certain era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Cosby early stuff versus Cosby the rapist.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, because
if you Cosby, judge chocolate cake his fucking private behavior, you know, that's one thing. And we talked about that on Ronnie's show years ago. But like, if you just judge Cosby by his comedy, he's one of the best. That's just a shame.
Chocolate cake. Yes. Chocolate cake is one of the funniest things.
Oh yeah, that is.
And that's like
give us chocolate cake.
You know, like Eddie Murphy, Delirious and Raw mm-hmm. is like,
yeah,
two of the best comedy albums.
We talked about that earlier this year. All right, hey, we literally spent 10 minutes on Lake Placid talking about black comics. So anyway, this week, yesterday, Zach Strobel, he's a good boy, was on the show with Alexis Haina and Robert Winfrey, and we talked Wish. As Jason said, tomorrow, Alexis, him, and Dorian will be talking Thanksgiving. Then I have a double shot ahead of me on Thursday. In the afternoon, I'm going to have a daytime quickie with Alexis Haina. We're going to talk Upload Season 3, and then I will be spending my nights sipping wine and talking war with the War Master, Andrew Graham from our Canadian office. We'll be talking The Pacific, the sequel to Band of Brothers. Next week, we've got No Bananas, but we've also got a double shot of JMU Hollywood. We were talking The Killer by David Finch and Pain Hustlers. Tuesday, myself and Jesse wrap up the corner from the corner to the deuce with The Plot Against America, which I really need to buckle down and start watching. And then Thursday night, Alexis Haina will be doing a TV party for Scott Pilgrim takes off. My son actually wants to be on that show. He's like, hey, I want to be on that podcast. I saw it. I'm like, talk to the girl. All right, Jason, show us where you piss from.
I mean, I don't piss from anywhere currently. I'm just doing guest spots and working.
Don't you fucking do your fantasy football podcast?
No, I mean, me and Ty have like both of us with Ty got a new job and then I got this job currently. And life has been so hectic. We haven't had time to get together and our schedules haven't meshed up to record. So we're just kind of in the breeze right now. We're down to our final four in our charity guillotine league. So that's going good. Outside of that, I mean, we're still over at Mosaic Media. Definitely trying to get stuff going on there. Ty's still doing graphic design over there. If you need anything, definitely hit him up on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok. See what he can help you out. I mean, if you need any examples, definitely check out the Instagram. His graphic design is top notch. I don't say that just because, you know, he's one of my close friends. Some of his graphics he's done on some of our podcasts have been like amazing. He does coach soccer. He does graphics for that. He was doing graphics for a semi-pro football team. He's got some graphics up there. Definitely, if you're in the market for doing some graphic design, definitely look him up.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us here on Long Road to Ruin featuring Jason Teasley tonight. I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.